the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to the 43rd edition of Civitalk. We're going to look at the pro-life wave going across all the states right now, all the controversies that are going on, a lot of angst and hate towards the state of Alabama right now, and we're going to dig into just what's going on nationally in the pro-life movement. Why is it such an issue at this moment? And we're going to look at our latest Civitas polls. We just had a poll lunch a couple days ago, and Donna King and Donald Bryson gave some good commentary on that. We're going to dig in a little deeper to those polls and just look at, I think, a couple of issues that'll be important for North Carolinians to think about. And also Dan Bishop's big win in North Carolina 9. I think that's another important topic that we'll address. What do you want to talk about first, Brooks, on the lighthearted side? And what do you want to jump in?
Yeah, so we do like to start with something a little bit more lighthearted and get this conversation on the right beat. And since we're optimists, or at least one of us, one of us is.
I mean,
let's talk about summertime. It's almost summer. What is something that you remember as a child that you just really enjoyed doing during summer vacations?
Well, gosh, I mean, certainly going up to my grandfather, now my dad owns it, but they have a lake house in northern Michigan.
Oh.
And it's just still a lot of water skiing, a lot of fishing, a lot of tubing, water activities. Being on the water is something I've always enjoyed. I was a lifeguard in the summers in college, and I lived for 3.5 years in Hawaii, so that was summer 365 days a year. I enjoyed that, so I kind of missed the all-out summer. I've never been a huge winter person. It was hard for me to adjust to living in Grand Rapids for 8 years, and I enjoyed cross-country skiing and a few things, but I'd much rather have warm weather than cold weather. Cold weather is very miserable.
Oh, it is.
It impacts your health in a way, I think. At least for me, that, you know, it was better for me to go and move somewhere warmer and get back down to the South.
Yeah. So those sound like some good summer memories, just spending time with your grandparents. That's what I did some summers as well. So we lived a long ways from my grandparents, just as you did, as a military family. That's kind of par for the course.
It's sad sometimes. Yeah. It is, because we didn't see our grandparents for many years at times, and then we saw them more, you know, in a few years, but there were times you didn't see them for years.
Depending on where you're stationed at, that made it more or less likely for you to see them. But I remember one summer we actually went to Iowa, where my uncle is a soybean farmer, and so we got to spend several weeks out there in Iowa, and so that was a lot of fun.
So that's where you got your accent.
I picked it up in Iowa.
You have a little bit of a Midwestern tinge to your accent.
I do. Some people guess that I'm from Minnesota, which is funny, but I grew up most of my life in Fayetteville, so this is odd. I think I throw people off, but I do have a Midwestern accent. But we had a lot of fun in Iowa and would go ahead and just, you know, go play on my uncle's farm equipment, you know, avoid getting our legs chopped off, though, and stuff like that. But good summers like that. And then there were other summers where my mom and dad were both working, and so me and my sister stayed at home all day and, you know, ate lots of ice cream and watched, well, they didn't have Netflix back then, so we had to watch stuff on regular cable TV. So Judge Judy and Party of Five.
I will say, too, because just my dad being in the Air Force, got to live some cool places and lived in Egypt for a while. So we got to go to the Red Sea a lot during the summer.
Oh, stop.
And spend time in the Sinai and go up to Mount Sinai. I am showing off. I mean, you know, when you get older and you have kids and bigger responsibilities, you can't experience some of these things sometimes. So it was just fun going to the Sinai a lot during the summer. And it's a lot of cool history there because of the Arab-Israeli wars and seeing some of the tanks on the side of the road and just going out there and doing some hiking and coming across Bedouins and diving in the Red Sea. All that stuff was a lot of fun. And
that's
the
cool.
Red Sea is cool if you're a diver. You just kind of go underwater, and it seems like you can see for miles because it's just so clear. And so it's even clearer than water in the Pacific and other tropical areas, kind of similar to probably more the Caribbean. But you can kind of go underwater and just see for miles, it seems like.
Well, so just talking about that environment and those clear waters, I think that makes me think of this being a good time for us to talk about some of our poll results that deal with the environment, because we actually polled North Carolinians recently and talked about just the state of the environment, not only across North Carolina, but across the United States. Like, what is your perception? Do you believe North Carolina and the United States has gotten cleaner, or has the environment, gotten worse over the years? And surprisingly, most North Carolinians thought that, well, 44% stated that they believed it was less clean now than it was 10 years ago here in our state. And 54% said they believed the whole United States was
so
less clean.
So a plurality, at least on the North Carolina side, on the environment. And so when that didn't surprise me necessarily or shock me because of all the climate alarmism we hear about in the news. And, you know, as Donald mentioned and Donna mentioned at the poll launch, Donna King, who was our guest speaker, that, when they focus on bad news, that's what happens when you talk about the environment, is the media focuses on bad news. They're not going to focus on a positive report or just good environment in general. It's not going to generally make the news. And that's understandable to some degree. I'm not calling it a media conspiracy or anything, but it makes sense. I mean, a lot of times you focus on the environment, it's going to be the bad news. But when I saw that, it surprised me a little bit, because when you look at the carbon monoxide levels and carbon dioxide levels, a chart, it literally kind of goes down like this. I mean, it dips down pretty dramatically. I mean, 70s was a very precarious time for air quality in America. It led to a lot of these standards that we have today. And, you know, they got worse in parts of the 80s. And certainly the smog in cities like LA and New York are notorious. But they've gotten a lot better because of technological advancements.
Well, and since 1990, like that chart that you were referencing, if you go to the EPA's website, there's been a report. And we've steadily been improving. And all of those, the carbon emissions, greenhouse gases, like all of those have been reduced since 1990. The trend has gone downward. And I think that does speak a lot to the innovation that we're seeing. People do care about taking care of the environment. I mean, this is something that shouldn't be a partisan issue. Good stewardship of our earth is an important thing. And thankfully, though, we're seeing a trend that we have been taking it seriously. Yep. And so even in the private sector, there have been some regulations, but also just on the private sector, people care about doing this. It's part of this social enterprise mentality where people want to feel like they're contributing in a good way to the earth and into the communities around them. And this
I'm a little concerned about you, though. It seems like you might be suggesting that Beto's prophecy that we only have 10 years left to deal with climate change may not be true.
May not be true. Well, yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, are you questioning?
I thought it was AOC's prophecy.
No, well, AOC's was the first to prophesy.
Hers was 12 years.
But she actually admitted in a recent article interview I saw that, because I think she was a little bit mad at Beto for stealing her thunder and saying 10 years. She said that, I was slightly kidding. I was trying to kind of sound the alarm. Right. And Beto was being more literal that it's really 10 years.
Yeah. Well,
at least AOC, people criticize her, but she's giving us 12 years. She's giving us a 2-year reprieve.
We've got 2 additional years to save the planet, y'all. Start our Captain Planet team. So anyways, if current trends continue, I am sure we are going to see our carbon footprint continue to decrease as far as it, when it comes to just bad air quality and things like that. We're going to see continued improvement. So I think that alarmism is...
Yeah. Do you think some of the alarmism... Because I do think... I mean, we're certainly... If you study the science, and I'm not a scientist, and nor am I a climatologist or anything, but we are in a warming period. I think all scientists, for the most part, seem to be in agreement about that. Whether that's being caused by man-made effects, there's a little bit more disagreement, but most seem to assume it's man-made. But we don't know yet if there's positive benefits to this, negative or catastrophic. Some people obviously tend to be argue catastrophic, and more of those are on the political side. Do you think, not to be cynical, because I'm an optimist, but I'm not a cynical person at all, of course. I mean, you know me, Brooke. But do you think that politicians might be using the climate and the environment to perhaps control our lives a little bit more? Or is that just maybe raised deep down cynicism?
Oh, no. Well, fear moves people, right? Fear moves people into action. And so I think that there is this huge hyping up of problems and drumming up problems, because that gets votes, right? That brings people to the polls. So if there's this big boogeyman coming out and, you know, the earth is going to end in 12 years, and that's why you shouldn't have babies and fly on airplanes and you should eradicate all cows, then, you know, you're securing for yourself a base that is going to be loyal to you if they buy into what you're peddling. So I think that North Carolinians, a lot of their perception has been shaped by what they've been hearing in the headlines. And like you said, and like Donald said at the poll launch, you hear stuff that's going on in the environment when it's something bad. Same with the economy. You don't usually hear the good stuff that's happening.
And I think one thing to add, and John Sanders, he was the first to write about this, at least in North Carolina, that I saw, the John Locke Foundation pointed out that the United States is actually a model. He had a chart for this too. The United States is a model for emissions reductions around the world. I mean, mm-hmm. we are the model around the world when it comes to emissions reductions. So I kind of wrote about this a little bit on our site on a blog post related to this topic. And I think part of the problem that there's some alarmism mm-hmm. is that when the economy is going really well, this sort of coincides together. But there's a dovetail effect, I think, when people, you know, are in prosperous area of the country than the prosperous parts of the world, they tend to worry about the environment more because that becomes a bigger problem. If you have a job and you have a steady income and you're living a little bit more of a life of leisure, so you kind of focus on these things in the future that, you know, someone doesn't have the privilege really to focus on if they're just trying to scrape by or struggling right. to some degree.
So you're saying it's a first world problem.
It's largely a first world problem. I'm not saying it's not an important
right.
problem. I mean, right. we do need to focus on the environment and advocate creation care, especially if you're a mm-hmm. Christian or a person of another faith. You want to, you know, care for the environment that God has created for you and allowed, you know, mankind to flourish. So I think that is important aspect of just the environment in general and understanding it. But I do wonder if, you know, this is more of a problem of more prosperous countries where, you know, our environment, you know, ironically is cleaner, yet we tend to focus on it more because of, you know, we've just got a better life and we have a certain amount of leisure time to focus on it.
Yeah. And so we see that also just even in safety. We're a lot safer nowadays. Mm-hmm. Children are a lot safer nowadays.
Well, until you have like your second or third kid, right? I mean,
well, it's harder to keep track mm-hmm. of them after that point. Yeah, it's like when you only have two arms.
Your first
right?
kid, you're like hovering over them like a helicopter
yes,
parent.
I was such a helicopter.
Poor Henry,
mom.
You know, he's like, yeah. He goes unsupervised.
He's okay. He's, yeah. he's making his own PB&Js. You know, like, can he even have peanut butter?
He could be over there like putting a fork in the electric socket. We wouldn't know. But that happened to
he's
me.
He's just kidding.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. That actually happened to me as a child. I'm not blaming my parents, but I stuck my fork in the socket and I actually flew across the room. My hair was sticking up and everything. I was pretty jittery.
That actually explains a lot.
Does it? So. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Now I'm like,
that's why I'm not
picture.
A neurosurgeon. It is somebody's fault. I guess it was my own fault. I stuck the fork in the socket. I was like two or something, or maybe a little bit younger than that.
Oh my.
And I flew across the room. So
wow.
It does explain a lot.
Okay. So another poll result, let's move on real quick, because another poll result is that, and you can find these at nccivitas.org, and you just click on our poll tab and you can see the latest poll results. But another one of them had to do with public perception and favorability of the North Carolina Republican and Democratic parties. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, given how much bad press the North Carolina Republican Party has received because of the federal indictment of their chairman, Robin Hayes. Still, they actually had a higher favorability rating than the North Carolina Democratic Party. So I believe that, what was their favorability rating?
I think it was 41.
41 to 39%. So yeah. They were both within the margin of error.
Right. But it was a jump up for the Republicans from the previous month. I think
yes.
they were like
okay.
37.
Okay. So the Republican Party in the state was at a 42% favorability, okay. 37% unfavorable. And the Democratic Party was 39% favorable and 39% unfavorable. And again, because of the chairman of the Republican Party receiving such bad media after that federal indictment that tied him to some money laundering issues and to see that favorability was so high was a little surprising to me, but I think that also drove home the point that a lot of people don't pay attention to state party politics.
No, I mean, I would not, if I did not work at Civitas, I don't know if I would pay that much attention to, I mean, I would probably maybe a little bit more than your average citizen, but I wouldn't cover it like I do. I mean, it's not, I think people focus on national politics partly because of the cable news aspect
right.
mm-hmm. and talk radio to some degree, but just because that saturates the way I think most people dispense of news. And, you know, when people get outraged and take to social media, it's mostly about national politics, not state politics. I mean,
right.
there's only a little bit of a trifle of people pretending to be outraged about state politics as opposed to national
yeah,
politics.
It's very much a bubble. Yeah. And I think that's important. And one of the reasons that we don't exclusively focus on state politics and Civitalk is because we understand that, you know, that you guys also have those concerns about what's happening at the federal level and how it's interacting with us at the state level. But we also want to keep you informed of what's going on at the state level, because you probably aren't going to hear it in very many other outlets. It's just not covered as often. So
yeah,
it's really important.
It's a big mission of the Civitas Institute to try try to just take some of this, dispense some of this information at the state capitol and disperse it statewide and reach our audience, obviously. And it's an important part of just being a civic educator, right? And helping them to understand what's going on in Raleigh and what is important, what they need to know. And, you know, I think that's just one of the big positives of the Civitas Institute. We have the ability to do that. And so we'll obviously continue to do that. And it's important because, look, I mean, you are more impacted by your state and local government than you are your federal government, even right. today. So it's an important aspect of policy that we focus on these issues. And then, you know, it goes right into our mission.
Yep, absolutely. And so speaking of state politics, so let's talk about what's happening across the United States. But at the state level, is this pro-life wave sweeping across the United States?
Yeah, you've had at least a half a dozen, I think maybe a couple more states, but maybe seven or eight that have passed pro-life legislation. Many of these states are in the Southeast and socially more conservative areas of the country. But Ohio's been another state that has passed, I think, a heartbeat bill. Mm-hmm. And so these are very popular pieces of legislation. And this I think this whole notion, these were happening a little bit before, but it started to pick up steam when the governor of Virginia, his name Ralph Northam, I think, mm-hmm. Made the comments about infanticide. And of course,
who is like the sixth least popular governor
is
in
that
the
right?
union.
That makes that the does sixth make or sense. Seventh, I mean, so. Just the way he stuck his foot no, in his fourth. Mouth on issues yeah. outside of even abortion. And, of course, the blackface and other controversies surrounding some of his tenure right now. I mean, a lot of people thought he wouldn't be in power now, but he's still there. But you had New York that passed a bill basically legalizing abortion up to the moment of birth.
Yep.
And so a lot of blue states are going that direction. So I think it shows the divide nationally, Brooke, of what's happening in America, which is what we've all known is that we're so split from an ideological perspective. We've got states that are more conservative, looking to affirm life. In states that are less conservative, looking to affirm their abortion policies in those states. So it's going to continue to delve that way. And I think the Supreme Court's going to have to step in at some point. And ultimately, I mean, the solution in my mind, the political solution, there's a cultural solution to abortion, which is much more in depth. But the political solution is to allow states more flexibility. And to me, Roe v. Wade is a misguided piece of legislation. It has nothing to do with the Constitution. If anything, our Declaration affirms the right to life along with liberty and happiness, mm-hmm. that language that Jefferson used. And, you know, what I'd like to see from a political perspective is to remand this decision more back to the states to give them flexibility under our federalism system to allow for more flexibility in how they maneuver on this issue and how they regulate it. It's not something the federal government needs to be involved in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. And I believe that that's the best way to ensure that the public's voice is heard on this, right? Because their elected officials who they actually can engage with on a more regular basis at the state level are able to hear their constituents' voices on this. Now, it's been no secret for many decades that one of the goals of the pro-life movement is to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And I know that there are some people that are on the pro-life side that don't think that's the best route. I think that it's certainly one aspect of the pro-life movement, the pro-life movement's approach to eradicating abortion that to me, it makes a lot of sense. Push for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, but sometimes you do have to do it incrementally. However, what Alabama did by banning all abortions, I think that really helped move that window of discussion
for sure.
So that the states that have the 8-week abortion bans and 6-week abortion bans, that seems more like a compromise that maybe they'll land on, and so they can continue to chip away at these egregious laws that, you know, at the heart of them, they really attempt to pit a mother against a child and failing to recognize that you can love both of them. You can love and empower that mother, even those who have maybe become pregnant out of horrific circumstances like rape or like incest. And as heartbreaking as that is, and if you're like me and you know some ladies that have been victimized in that way, you have nothing but compassion for them. And you want to make sure that they are safe and protected and understand that they're loved. But you also want to ensure that you're protecting an innocent life that didn't choose to be conceived out of those circumstances. And I think that in the pro-life movement, also, although we're, you know, championing for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, but we're also wanting to change the culture on abortion.
Absolutely. I think you have to change the culture because, you know, the left big argument is, well, you have back alley abortions. And while I think that would be more rare, there would be instances that would happen. And I think you have to change people's hearts along with changing the legislation, because you can certainly lawmake till the cows come home. But if you're not ultimately changing hearts of people, then I don't think you'll ever solve that issue for sure. And so, you know, it's a heartbreaking issue. And like you talked about, pitting mother against their child. I think that's one of the most heartbreaking things of all. And it also pits fathers. It allows them to have less responsibility. You know, if a male supports abortion and is going around getting a woman or women pregnant, it allows them off the hook, right? I mean, mm-hmm. And I think at the deeper level to me as a Christian, I mean, it's a very Gnostic tendency, this rejection of the body and this rejection of procreation and life giving. It's completely a rejection of the state of affairs and the order of things. And so, to harm or kill a child to me is so barbaric, and it's really a pagan tendency. It's not something that naturally came out of the Christian West. I mean, this is going back to paganism where we sacrifice children, and you really can't advance as a society on the just by killing your children or tossing them aside. And so I would just say that it's something that people should pray about to change the culture of life, because we're having these discussions. There's a lot of anger on social media that saddens me, Brooke, and people are upset at the state of Alabama and throwing tantrums. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, how we nationalize every issue. And, you know, I'd like to see space for different states to try different things and to see some of the anger out there about, this is the culture of Alabama. They want to protect life. I mean, it's a very conservative state. My wife's from Birmingham. I've been to Alabama so many times in my life. In many ways, it's kind of a second home to me. And, it's very conservative down there. There's a lot of church-going people. There's a lot of Christians. And so they want to protect life in that state, and they should have the right to do that. And, if you have a big disagreement about that, then you shouldn't move to Alabama. I mean, mm-hmm. you're not going to fit in real right. well. So I think that's just something to remember. I think states should have more leeway in protecting life. And then hopefully, like you said, Brooke, that ultimately people's hearts will be changed. And I think we've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast of this issue lately, but I think it's sometime in the future. Technologically, we've already advanced so much that people know it's a human. People know it's a beating heart and all those things, and you can see it for yourself. I mean, it makes sense from a science perspective, but you can also see it through ultrasound and other technologies now. And, I think at some point in the future, we'll probably look back as a society collectively and say, how did we let this happen? It'll be very similar to slavery in terms of the way that we dehumanize people like this. And, 60 million people at least have been lost in this mm-hmm. country. And that's such a staggering number. It's hard to imagine all the lost souls and beauty that would have created, and people who have lost siblings, mothers who have lost children, fathers who have lost sons or daughters. And it's heartbreaking to me, because having children, I mean, it's a joyous, it's a difficult thing, but it's a joyous part of your life that it just, those of you who are parents out there know this, and it just breaks my heart to think of anybody destroying their child.
So another component of this is also the declining fertility rates across the West and in the United States. So we're already at below replacement birth rate. And that's another part of this conversation as we think about how public policy interacts with culture and what is considered desirable and acceptable. So people are having fewer children, people are delaying marriage or foregoing it altogether, yet government spending has been set at such a level that it is typically, dependent upon our population continuing to grow, because as we know, many of the baby boomers are going to be hitting retirement or already have hit retirement. They'll begin drawing Social Security, and Social Security was established with the anticipation that population would continue to trend in the direction that it was during the 1930s and 1940s. But again, we're at below replacement birth rates among all women, whether white, black, Hispanic, or otherwise. And so this is just another element of this conversation where there are real world implications. When Ray mentioned the beauty that was lost as a result of abortions, there's also these economic implications that happen just because we're not thinking about the fact that we have so discouraged people from having children and having families. And so there are real effects in multiple aspects of society. So anyways, we will continue to talk also about the abortion survivors ban bill that is being presented in the House here in North Carolina, but we'll update you guys on that later. But I want to get to North Carolina's 9th Congressional District because, as you probably know, there was a new election called because of election fraud between the Harris campaign and the McCready campaign. It looked like Harris may have won.
The two Dans.
Wait, well, Mark Harris
and Dan McCready.
So during the 2018 election. Yeah. It looked like somebody that was working for the Harris campaign, Dowless McCray, didn't look like it. He actually did tamper with some absentee ballots. And so they had to call a new election. And so now Dan Bishop, who is a state senator, ended up winning the Republican primary there.
Yeah. I mean, he got a lot of media attention nationally. A lot of people posted this on social media that the national media was trying to tie him, you know, the bathroom bill guy. They were tagging him with that name. So he certainly is a conservative. He's got a conservative record in the Senate. He beat out, I think, a field of at least 8 or 9.
Yes, it was a big
field. Yeah,
big
it may have
field.
Been 10. I don't remember the exact number, but I believe he obviously avoided the runoff, and so it'll give him more time to campaign. It'll give him a jump start on that general election campaign with McCready. So he did really well. He got endorsed by the Club for Growth, got endorsed by a lot of conservative and social conservative groups. I think he'll run a very good campaign, and it'll be interesting to see, Brooke, some of that polling we've done that shows the Republican Party has benefited, even with the North Carolina 9 story dominating so much for much of the year. It wasn't just Robin Hayes and some of the stuff going on at the state party, but all of the negative publicity that came out of North Carolina 9, that the Republican Party has improved their view from the average North Carolinian across the state. So it'll be interesting to think if Bishop can capitalize on that. I think a lot of people thought McCready would easily win this time around. I think this is going to make the race much more competitive. And I think the longer it goes on, and because he has more time, it gives him a realistic shot to possibly win the seat.
So, but McCready has been positioning himself as a much more moderate Democrat. I mean, he's even come out against Nancy Pelosi. And so he has tried to distance himself from Bernie Sanders as well. So there, because he's trying to keep in mind that although Charlotte area is covered under that particular district, so are some of the surrounding counties that are very red. And so he regularly talks about his Christian faith and the fact that he was a Marine. Mm-hmm. And so there's these other elements to it where I think that, if anything, at least this is more of a moderate conversation.
Yeah.
Politically, it's not something that you would maybe expect farther up north.
Bishop says he's going to tie his record to Pelosi and some of his comments. And I know he got in a little bit of a kerfuffle with was it Ilhan Omar sent him a donation that he cashed?
He sent it back.
So, you know, we're going to be transparent and explaining that he sent the donation back, and I think put out a release with that. I don't remember exactly what it said, but he did send that money back once after it became after it became a controversy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think Bishop's big challenge is, can he pin him down as more of a liberal Democrat than more of a centrist or even a conservative Democrat? And I think there's a little bit of a challenge to do that because McCready has kind of been tight-lipped on some things. You know, he hasn't admitted to some things, and you know, there's been a lot of people that campaigned for against Pelosi as Democratic candidates and ended up voting for her as speaker. That's happened before. I'm old enough to remember when that actually happened the first time she was speaker. There were members that campaigned against her to ever become speaker and ended up voting for her. So it will be interesting to see if, you know, that's something he keeps his word with, or he kind of breaks on that like a lot of other Democrats have done. So it'll be fascinating to watch. It'll be a very competitive campaign, and I'm interested. I think he's going to be, it looks like he's going to be a member of the Freedom Caucus if he gets elected.
Dan Bishop?
They're actually raising money for him, so that's a good sign. I'm a big fan of the Freedom Caucus. In general, they tend to be much more obviously fiscally conservative and tried to move the Republican conference in the House to the right and tried to get them to speak out more and vote in a better way on the debt and deficit. And so, you know, they've failed a little bit at times, but they've had some successes. And so I'm hoping that he will caucus with them and strengthen that caucus in the House.
Yep. So we'll keep you guys posted on that. We will probably do some polling on that as it gets closer to the actual election. But we're about out of time. However, we are going to be going to the Charlotte area soon. So speaking of North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, we have a poll lunch there on June 19th. So if you're in the Charlotte area or you just want to make a day trip there and hang out with us, we will be meeting on June 19th at Maggiano's. And you can find out more information as well as get your tickets if you go to nccivitas.org/lunch. And that's where you can purchase your tickets. So we hope to see our Charlotte audience over there.
And make sure you listen to our interview with Sienna Stanfield. Is that her last name? She is a wonderful young lady. It was a great interview. So that should be up next Friday. Mm-hmm. So go to iTunes, Google Play. Rate us if you enjoy this podcast. We actually rely on rankings for more visibility on the site. So we would appreciate if you enjoy this show, if you like it, help us out and go rate it. Give us a give us your feedback. And we'd really appreciate that. It'll keep this show going and it will allow us to maybe broaden the show to some degree and do some other things with it. So we appreciate your time and your consideration in doing that. And we enjoy North Carolina. We enjoy our audience. So we love any kind of feedback we get. Okay.
Thank you guys. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.